I got shooters touch. Can't nobody ball like me.
I was getting a lot of no letters. And I kept some of the letters because it was like motivation for me.
I was young in my coaching career. I did know that those guys I was coaching, this was their one opportunity.
If you really want the players to like you, just make them better.
If I want to keep playing this game, you know, as a job, I have to continue to get better at that.
You have to figure out a way to carve out some value that you have that you can bring not only to your team but also your profession.
It's really good information, and I pick up little nuggets all the time.
For me, it's all about confidence, man. You have to have confidence to be a shooter, to be a basketball player in general, to have success. It's all about confidence. If they walk a mile in my shoes, then they can ball like I do. But my game different, not the
same with it. I travel now, y'all just change pivots. Shooters, welcome back or welcome in to another episode of the Shooters Touch Podcast. We're so appreciative that you're here. One favor that we do have to ask for of you is wherever you get your podcast, just drop a 5-star review. It helps us a ton. Also, if you follow us on Twitter, we'd love a retweet. Just get the word out a little bit more and let more coaches and people start to hear these stories about great coaches and players throughout our great state of Iowa. And so we truly do appreciate it. Also, if there's anybody that you can think of that we should have on the podcast that we haven't, reach out to us. We'd love to hear it. We'd love to take you up on that and get some new voices on the podcast. And so DM us on Twitter would probably be the easiest way. With that, let's get into today's episode. This one's a lot of fun. We bring on Coach Nemeth. He is the head women's basketball coach at Simpson College down in Indianola. He's in his 36th season coaching the Storm. And so a lot to tell, a lot to catch up with him and learn a little bit about his journey going all the way back to his baseball days. And so a lot of fun talking with Coach and getting his theory and philosophy on a lot of things. And so we think you guys will really enjoy this one. As always, shoot or shoot. Fourth quarter down 3-2-1.
Better call on me. If you know you need... Well, Coach Nemeth, welcome to the Shooter's Touch.
Well, thank you for having me.
Yeah, Coach, we're excited to get you on here and hear a little bit of your story and your coaching path along this journey of yours that you've had. But before we get too far, how are things going? We just got done with Thanksgiving. Did you guys have a couple games over Thanksgiving? Did you have an opportunity to enjoy some time with family?
Yeah, this is the first time in my career that I've never played over Thanksgiving weekend. So it was really strange for me to be home on Thanksgiving, and it was different. I'm not sure I want to do it again, but you know, it just worked out with our scheduling the way it was this year that we had the weekend off. So we've played 5 games up to now. We're 2-3, and this break probably came at a good time so we could kind of clean up some things that we need to work on. And yeah, it was definitely a little different for me not having to be in a gym.
Yeah, I bet that you're probably a little uncomfortable and uncomfortable being able to be at home wondering, geez, I feel like I should be doing something or going somewhere or prepping something. And so, that had to have been a little different. You mentioned it. So obviously, and you already have a conference game under your belt. I know played Loras at Loras, correct? Or was that? No, that was
we
at
played
home.
Loras last Tuesday at home and lost to them by,
I think it was 45,
41. Yep. Yeah. Probably the lowest scoring game I've ever coached in. And our best player was out with an injury. And so we changed the style and tried to catch him off guard with some things that we did. And we normally are a very up-tempo, fast-paced team and really slowed it down and played some good half-court defense. And I think we were both surprised at the low score.
Paying attention to Simpson women's basketball for long enough, games in the 40s is not what you normally expect from the Storm. You're usually, I mean, if it's under 75, it feels like something went wrong.
Yeah. 40s are usually our halftime scores.
Right.
So Yeah, it was a little different for us, and but it did keep us in a game. We had a lead going into the fourth quarter, and you know, our youth kind of showed at the end, but it kept us in the game, gave us a chance to win, and that's not how I want to play in the future. But I think it was a good change of how they were preparing
right.
for what they thought we would give them, and so I think it it helped us.
That's all you ask for, right? Is have an opportunity late in the game, and you know, whether you have to mix some things up or do a few things out of character, that's all you can really ask for. And you guys did that, like you said, had a chance, four point game, you were right there. But you also mentioned your youth. You know, we'll get to last year and the season that you guys had and the run that you went on, but I lost a lot of those players. And so talk a little bit about that coming into this year, you know, kind of a little bit of a turnover, some younger players. You're going to have some growing pains, but what are some things that, you know, you're kind of excited about and, you know, wanting to take step by step?
Well, it's definitely been a change from the last couple of years. And, you know, I had a group that was together for 2 to 3 years, and they understood everything. And actually, night before a game that we played last year, I text my team and, without having a chance to go through a walkthrough anything the next day before the game, I wanted to make a change on how we were going to defend the post. And I didn't have to show them or explain it. I just told them what we were going to do. And because they had been in the program and been with me for a few years, they picked it up and did a great job executing it. That's the first time I've ever done it, but I had the trust in them because of their experience in the program and with me. And this year's a little different. We lost all 5 starters and you know, we're basically, we have a couple seniors and a junior, and the rest are freshmen and sophomores. So some very talented players, and I'm very excited about coaching them. And I kid my assistants that, you know, we actually get to coach now instead of just trying to stay out of the way. And, you know, I think it's a good group to work with. I'm very excited about it. I think anytime you have turnover like that, you have a chance to kind of mold the next group to be champions too. And there's a lot of things to learn for them, and you just have to be patient and make sure that they understand everything and can learn and move on.
And that's fun though too. I mean, that's something where getting the opportunity to make those adjustments, like you said, not a game in the 40s is not what you want to do, but that involves coaching, that involves changing a little bit of philosophy and doing some things and adjusting on the fly. And you know, players and coaches alike can learn from that. But you mentioned your staff. You could have probably texted your staff and they could have made the changes, because if I'm reading or looking at this right, it looks like you got a lot of former players that you're grooming on the coaching side of things now. Is that correct?
I do. I'm very excited about the staff I have. Claire Johnson played for me for 4 years and is in her third year coaching with me. And she's our recruiting coordinator, does a great job. And so that's a total of 7 years with me. Cameron Kincaid played for 5 and is in her first year coaching. So she's been with me for 6 years. And then Jenna Taylor, who was an All-American here, she played 6 years for me because of COVID and is in her first year. And, you know, I'm excited. Number one, they played in the system. They know it. They could probably teach it better than I can because they are actually doing it out on the floor, but we're all on the same page and they understand what I want, how I want it to be taught. And I have just 100% trust in what they're doing. So I don't have to overlook if I give them a group to work with during practice. I don't have to worry about whether they're doing it the right way. So it makes my job a lot easier. And then you always have that special bond with, you know, your players that played for you and put the time in and sacrificed for the program. And you have a lot of respect for them. And I certainly do for those 3.
Yeah, that's fun. And like you said, there's a lot of things that you don't need to spend time on when you have that rapport and you have that relationship already. You know, there are things that the girls are going to have to learn on this other side of the ball, essentially. And, you know, being on the sideline and figuring out practice, but when you don't have to spend the time getting to know likes and dislikes, it makes it a lot easier. And it feels like you can really hit the ground running and get things going.
Absolutely. I think the one thing that I trust them with, because they've been in the system for a long time, I can ask them, did you like playing this when you played, or did you think it didn't work, or what was your favorite set play or out of bounds play? And since they've actually been through it and experienced it, they can give me an inside feedback, which is so helpful. You know, it's definitely different having a set of eyes on the sideline and watching how things develop, and then having a set of eyes on the floor where you're in the midst of making it work and understanding, you know, the nuances of it. And so that kind of feedback is invaluable to me.
Yeah, that is, you're right. Like getting that feedback to understand, like, hey, what was about this player? Did you like this set or this situation when we went to this late clock or whatever it is? Like having that feedback, you know, and those girls had a ton of success too. And so they were in those moments and they kind of know. And obviously that relationship changes too. It's different when, you know, Adam and I, we've all been there. When you're player and coach versus peer and you're on staff, I mean, the insight and the communication is different. And so being able to have players who are just there or who, you know, especially from a scouting situation, you know, obviously there's going to be some turnovers with the other teams, but having these women know what to expect or, hey, what the tendencies are for these girls or what the tendency is for this team or what they did every time last year when they caught in the wing, like that has to be vital information for you guys.
Oh, it is, you know, and there's still players in the league that they played against. And so, like you said, that helps a ton on with their inside information on how they thought those players played. And then I just think the trust level from the team, knowing that they were all three were very successful and well decorated athletes for us. They know that they know how to be successful, what it takes to be successful. So when they talk to the team listens and understands that they were champions, that they were all conference, all district, all American players, and that they should. And I tell the team all the time, you got to soak up everything you can from these young coaches, because they've been there in your shoes. They made it work. They figured out how to win. They figured out how to become better players. There's not a better situation for you to learn from. So I'm hoping that they're all soaking in every word they hear.
Well, and it also has to help a little bit, a young guy like yourself, bridge the gap a little bit to be able to relate to the players and kind of help communicate with the women as well, I would assume.
Yeah, for sure. I've been around for a little while and so I think it, you know, I've had players come in and we've had conversations that were good conversations, deep conversations. But I think more and more the players are more comfortable going to my assistants, and I'm fully supportive of that. And I think it gives them a chance to feel like they have somebody that's, I don't want to call them a peer, but closer to their age and can relate and understand what they're going through and be of help to them. So definitely is one of the reasons I think that they're so good as a new staff.
Yeah, I mean, I would completely agree with you, Coach, that, you know, I've had the opportunity to have a couple of the, I guess, players and friends that I had in college actually move into like a graduate assistant or assistant coaching job when I was playing. And whether this is the case or not, you know, it always in the player's mind probably seems like, hey, I can go talk to this person because I used to play with them. You know, they They kind of know what I'm going through when compared to, you know, talking to a head coach, which maybe brings some anxiety to maybe talking about a few issues. But yeah, I don't think there is a lot of downside to having a former player on staff with you. So I guess good recruiting on your part. I
definitely think that when you have good people in your program, you want to keep them around. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Claire, Cam, and Jenna were not great players only, but they were great people too. And I wanted to find a way to keep them around. Jenna has a full-time job and is going to do really well in it. So she's doing it just for the love of the game. You know, Claire and Cam, I think, would be great head coaches someday. They both have a great feel for the game and how to relate and have a great basketball IQ. So I'm hoping that one or both of them continue on and become head coaches someday.
That's awesome. That is really cool. Well, with that, I guess let's go all the way back here, Coach. You know, tell our listeners and us a little bit about your childhood, growing up. Where'd you grow up? And then eventually, you know, how athletics kind of played into your childhood, elementary, middle school, and that type of thing.
Athletics was kind of my life. That's what I love to do. I grew up in Kansas City, went to North Kansas City High School, played baseball and basketball there, and went on to college. I played at Missouri for a year and a half and then transferred because of grades to a smaller school, Park University in Kansas City, and finished playing both sports there. And then I couldn't see myself after graduation of not being involved in sports somehow. It had been just so much a part of my life that that's when I decided I wanted to become a coach. And,
awesome.
And I got the opportunity. Actually right away at Park, I was there for a year after I was done playing as a assistant coach in men's basketball. And then I came up here and was in the Dallas Center Grimes School District for 2 years as an assistant boys coach. And then one of my former high school coaches got the job at Simpson. Knew I was in the area, asked if I would want to be his assistant coach for women's basketball. I jumped on that and I was with him for a year, and he went back to Kansas City. His wife was a superintendent down in the Lee Summit School District, and they didn't like living apart. And he went back down there and took a high school coaching job again. And I was in the right place at the right time and got the Simpson job on an interim basis.
Awesome.
For a year and did all right. And they decided to give me the job. The only thing the AD asked me was that they had been through a couple coaches, and he asked me to give them at least 3 to 4 years. And I thought, well, I can do that. So I promised him that. And my plan was to coach 3 to 4 years here, and then I wanted to move back to Kansas City and take a job at one of the colleges down there. But then I kind of fell in love with Simpson and fell in love with Iowa and met my wife and fell in love with her. So
that's a great story.
Ended up staying up here and now in my 36th year.
You fulfilled that 3 to 4 year promise for sure.
I think I did. Yeah,
you did. Very loyal. Very loyal. Well, hey, let's go back a little bit. You mentioned basketball and baseball were kind of the sports. Was that were those two sports the only two that you were playing, you know, when we're in elementary or middle school, or were you playing a couple more as well?
No, those were the two sports that drew my attention early. I just you tend to go towards where you have some ability and I thought I had some ability in those two sports. So I pursued them and tried to get better at them. And, you know, I think, to be honest with you, I was a better baseball player than I was a basketball player. And with basketball, I think that helped me on the coaching side, because I had to really figure out the game. Mm-hmm. I had to learn angles and learn all the nuances that could help me become a better player. So that just, I think, helped me as I got into coaching that, you know, there were, I just felt like I knew the game, or I could teach it better than what I could with baseball. With baseball, mm-hmm. it was like, okay, this, I'd show them how to do it and say, this is how you do it. And then they try it. And I didn't really have the understanding of trying to fix what they were doing, whether it was throwing or hitting or fielding. And I, cause I just did it. And so I thought, well, basketball is what I need to pursue. Cause I think I have a good understanding of how to teach it and how to help people get better. And so that kind of formed the future as far as going in or down the basketball road rather than baseball.
Well, you know what, Coach, it sounds exactly like when I started coaching my second grader, you know, having to actually explain the sport to, you know, youngsters is a lot different than actually, you know, playing it as an older kid, essentially in high school or college. So I kind of feel you on that one. In high school, obviously, you know, Mizzou is a very big school, you know, so I'm assuming that, I mean, you know, baseball, you know, was maybe the better sport that you were playing, but you said that, you know, after you left Mizzou, you played baseball and basketball. So was there ever any interest, you know, when you were in high school to pursue basketball in college? Or was it, you know, hey, you kind of knew that, hey, baseball is probably where I'm going to be, you know, at the next level.
Yeah, I was probably recruited a lot more for baseball than I was basketball. I did get a few offers for basketball. Okay. But I went down to Missouri and played baseball. And then with basketball, when I went to Park, I had the opportunity to play both and jumped at that. And I was glad, you know, I have some two sport athletes that I currently coach now. Our best player is also a soccer player. And so I think that has helped me understand, you know, what they're going through and the transition and the time it takes to jump from one sport to another and become fully acclimated to it. And so I think that's helped me a little bit in coaching the two athletes I have now.
Right. How long were you at Mizzou? One year, 2 years?
Year and a half. Year and a half.
Yeah, gotcha.
To be honest, my grades were not great. So I left there, went to a junior college, got my grades back up, and then that's when I ended up at Park University.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, so in that year and a half, you know, obviously we've each played a sport in college. You know, we know how hard that is to kind of do the whole athlete plus student. Were you playing intramurals there, or are you still getting on the court at Mizzou, or how did that look from the basketball side of things?
Yeah, actually, my freshman year we had on the basketball team, there was a couple injuries and they were short of players. So there was another baseball player and I that would get to practice a little bit.
Very cool.
And help them out up until baseball started in January. Stan Ray was a freshman there also from the Southeast Missouri area. And he and I became good friends at that time. It just kept me close to the game. And I was working out with some of the basketball guys in the off season. And so it really helped my game. I probably developed more during that time than any other time in my career. Just playing against that caliber of player.
Yeah. My apologies.
Helped me a lot.
My apologies for saying intramural. You were a little bit above that at Mizzou. That's awesome. That's good.
I was, It was a great experience for me. You know, it very humbling, when you're playing against those kind of athletes and, mm-hmm. But yeah, it was a great learning experience.
Very cool. With those two sports in mind, what skills do you utilize on the baseball field that you would compare to skills that, you know, are utilized on the basketball court as well?
Well, in baseball, I was a catcher. And so as a catcher, you see the whole field and you, mm-hmm. you have to make quick decisions, like on bunt coverage, you know, where to throw the ball. And so you see everything from your position. In basketball, as a point guard, You know, I was in the same boat. I had to see the whole floor, make quick decisions, find the open person. And so I thought that related really well. And that was part of the game that I enjoyed. I enjoyed, I guess, on the basketball side, finding the open person and creating a shot for them. And in baseball, you know, calling a game and working with the pitcher and helping them, you know, throw the best game they could. So,
yeah, when you put those two positions in perspective and, you know, explain them like that, yeah, that's definitely, you know, catcher, point guard, you know, like you said, kind of calling the game for the pitcher, you know, seeing everything on the field, you know, knowing where to go with everything. That is, you know, definitely responsibilities of a point guard as well. So, you know, it seems like with those two positions you were playing, you know, they translated well, which is good. But you actually, as you mentioned, you know, you played a couple sports, you know, after you left Mizzou. How difficult was it to be an athlete in two different sports, you know, obviously being a student as well, you know, when you had that opportunity?
Well, you don't have much downtime. And you know, the one thing I always wondered was if I would have focused on one,
right,
could I have gotten a lot better at that one sport when I was spending time with the other sport? And I don't know that answer. And I guess the way I look at it is I enjoyed playing both, and I'm not sure I would have wanted to give one of them up. You know, the one I was playing at the time was my favorite at that time. And then when you moved on to the next sport, that became your favorite. So yeah. I got to meet friends from both, made my friendship circle a little larger, and so I always enjoyed that too.
Let me ask you this, Coach, did you have, so from an injury standpoint, in your playing days, you know, specifically at the college level, did you have much for injuries, or were you pretty clean bill of health playing two sports?
That's a really good point. Yes, I did have some injuries. We'd have fall baseball, and then we'd go into basketball, and then we'd play spring baseball. And so there were times when my right shoulder, you know, would be completely worn out from throwing in baseball, which would affect the way I shot the basketball.
Yeah.
You know, I did have some right shoulder problems, and then my knees,
from catching
and then going into running and jumping would get sore. I actually probably survived on aspirin my senior year in basketball. And now my knees definitely tell the history of that. But it's hard on the body for sure.
Well, it's interesting to me because I feel like there's always, I mean, everybody's different. And there's always a fine line with that because, yeah, I mean, when you're throwing that much and you're doing similar motions and you're going from one to the next, especially at that level, at the college level, like you're going to wear out. And we all know what we were like as, you know, 18, 19, 20, 22 year old kids. I mean, you're just not always making the best decisions. But I do also think there's an element of when you have different muscles and you're playing different sports, that it seems like sometimes too, you know, back to your what ifs of if I would have just focused on one, there's something about the body that having the opportunity to take a break from those muscles and go maybe play another sport and still get that competitive edge and still learn how to overcome adversity, that, you know, a lot of times there's a lot of athletes that can really benefit, you know, from playing multiple sports and not always necessarily specializing in one.
Oh, I totally agree. I think that, you know, there's a lot of specialization that goes on nowadays, and I think, you know, there's some good things for that, but I also think there's some bad things on that side. And like you said, you know, you play a different sport that works different muscles, which just makes you a better athlete overall. And I think there's a lot of positives with not specializing, and those that are rare and you know, are the kind of athlete that are going to go professional and have figured that out and you know, they're getting recruited by Division Ones and stuff and want to specialize. I kind of understand that as they're getting better at their craft. But other than that, I think you can make yourself a better athlete by diversifying your sport that you're playing, and just makes you better overall.
Yeah, and I'm assuming that, you know, especially with some of the athletes that you know you guys get on a consistent basis. You mentioned a couple of them have, you know, are multi-sport athletes right now. As far as recruiting goes, is that something that you and your staff, you know, are drawn to as far as multi-sports athletes in high school, or do you really like to see that kind of specialization? I know there's, you know, we've asked a lot of coaches this, and there's positives and negatives to both, I guess. But what is your kind of recruiting mantra like when it comes to those multi-sport athletes?
Yeah, well, first of all, I try and find the best athlete that I think I can get at for this level and go after them. And then, you know, whether they are a specialized athlete and they're only playing women's basketball, or if they're playing other sports, then we'll get into a conversation of, you know, do you want to play just one in college, or do you want to play another one also? And this is how it would work. But there, you can see the benefits, I think, you know, when I talk to them and they say, well, I want to just play basketball, but I want to play volleyball and softball in high school. And I'm like, that's great, you know. And then you can kind of see, you know, their hand-eye coordination that they might get from hitting in softball, or their jumping ability in volleyball, and how that translates to basketball, and how that's helped make them a better athlete.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think that's something that is huge. And you touched on it too, specifically, you know, at your level, at the Division III level, if you have an athlete, and, you know, maybe even yourself is a good example of this. Obviously, you went and played major Division I baseball, but then when you had the opportunity to play two sports, you know, you jumped at that opportunity. And so when you have these athletes who, I love playing these two sports, I'm, you know, maybe they're above a certain level in one sport, but they're like, you know what, I want to go to Simpson and I want to play two sports until maybe I don't love one as much anymore, and then I'll focus on that one. And so that could be a good draw and a recruitment tool for you guys too, if you're able to work with other programs and get some of these really high level athletes.
Oh, you're exactly right. And we've done that. I actually have a freshman from Ankeny Centennial that probably could have gone a little higher in soccer or a little higher in basketball. And because we would let her play both sports here, we were able to get her, which we might not have been able to do otherwise.
That's huge. That's big for you guys. And so, so coach, having done this, like you said, now in your 36th season, tons of success. I mean, you've conference championships, Sweet 16 runs. For one of the biggest things, and it's a little bit of a buzzword right now, but over 35 years and to be as successful as you have, and we talked a little bit about with your players who become coaches and good players become good people. But how do you address the buzzword of culture, and how do you create a culture around Simpson women's basketball that is continually growing, continually adapting, continually getting better, and just being a positive experience for these women when they join your program?
Yeah, we try and set the culture right away in the recruiting process and let them know what our program is like. Like to use the word family, and you know, I certainly think the players see it that way, that they're a family, and they're part of a bigger family, which is the alumni that have played here too. You know, I was thrilled last year when we hosted the first two rounds of the NCAA tournament of how many of our alums came back to watch those games, and when I talked to them about how they had been staying in touch with their teammates, it really, I think that's one of the things I get the biggest kick out of is talking to alums and seeing how they're either, well, to be honest with you, I've started recruiting some of their younger daughters now. and then how they still stay in touch with their teammates that they played with, you know, 20 years ago. And that just tells me they had a great experience. And, you know, what we try and do is as we set the tone in the recruiting process, then we set the tone when they get on campus for expectations of what it takes to be a part this program, and you know, so it's never anything they have to guess about. They know what's expected, and you know, we have a no drama rule. We talk about family. We talk about, you know, how can you make the team better. We don't talk about individual playing time or how many shots you're getting, and it's all about your teammates and are you helping them and how can they help you. And so I think if you just start that from day one and continue and they buy in, it just makes it a really nice atmosphere for practice and for games, and very supportive atmosphere. And that's what we want here.
Well, and it leads to a lot of wins as well. Here just recently, you eclipsed the 650 win plateau. Take us through that a little bit. I know you don't want to probably spend a whole ton of time on it, but it speaks to the longevity. It speaks to that culture. And so first of all, congrats, but what was it like that night when you had the opportunity to get your 650th win?
Well, thank you. Yeah. It was special. I got to be honest. I didn't know that it happened until after the game. We shook hands with the opposing team and we were gathering our stuff on the bench to walk off. And my assistant grabbed me and pointed me up to look up into the crowd where all the parents were holding signs that said, congratulations on 650. And then all of a sudden it kind of dawned on me that, yeah, I had 649 coming into this season. And I hadn't thought about it at all. You know, going into coaching, I never set a goal on how many games I was going to win or anything. I just wanted to win the next game. And then after you get to be in this profession long enough, they tend to pile up a little bit, hopefully. And I've been blessed with so many good players and good people that have gone through this program that, and I consider a lot of them friends and not just alumni or former players, but just good people. And you and I were talking earlier, and a couple were mentioned, and they're just still, they're in my heart. And I just, you know, I love my players. So,
well, and to bring
it's been
that
a good
up,
run.
To bring that up too, Coach, and it'll probably date all three of us actually a little bit here. So Tessa Van Osbrief, she did say that one thing that she noted was her sophomore year, so 2004-2005, she was a part of your 300th win out in California. And so to think from 2004-2005 to fast forward to now, and you got another 350 on top of that, that's a lot of winning and a lot of really good basketball.
Yeah, she was there for the 300th win in California. It was at California Lutheran. And she texted me when I got my 650th and, told me that she was there for 300. And I just you can't thank them enough. They're the reason that you're winning games. She was a big reason why we won a lot of games during her 4 years at Simpson. And, you know, it's just, I guess when you look at the numbers, you just think of how many different former players contributed to that and how lucky you were to have them.
So she also tells me that probably one thing that does not contribute to those wins is jump pass. Is there something against the jump pass? You want players to stay on their feet when they pass, or what's the deal here?
She used, Tessa, that was great. She used to drive me nuts. She would, she was so athletic. And then she would drive and then just jump and then decide who she was going to pass to while she was up in the air. And so, we had a couple conversations about that, because there more times than not, she wouldn't find that person to pass it to, and it became a turnover. So, she and I had that discussion, and I'd like to think I won that, because after a while she started deleting that from her playing repertoire. So
there you go.
Yeah, she was, I don't want to say a challenge, but she liked that jump pass we had to come to an agreement over that.
Yeah. Well, habits die hard, right? I mean, that's something that, had to try to change that in her. Although she did say though, When it came to conditioning, though, you, Coach, you're a little bit of a softy. Is there any truth to that?
Yeah, there might be. you know, I think that we have done our share of conditioning, but we probably could have done more. And that's probably the one thing that if I would change anything, I'd probably have my assistants take over.
I think she didn't know that. She said that, you know, he tended to leave the gym or something along those lines and let everybody else handle the conditioning.
I let the assistants take over. Yep.
Oh, that's great. That's fun. That's fun to hear. It's fun to learn a little bit on the inside on that. One of the questions that I like to ask coaches, especially seasoned coaches, like yourself, is what is maybe one or two of the coaching philosophies that, you know, you stood on, were high on, totally believed in, that as the game has changed, now you've changed a little bit and your philosophy has either shifted or changed either quickly or over the years?
Well, I would say probably my demeanor a little bit as far as, and Tessa might agree with this, but I have softened over the years. I try to be more understanding. Instead of just black and white, I will let players explain things to me now. I'm a lot more willing to listen why they want to do things a certain way instead of just saying, you know, it's my way or the highway. I think I've learned that I can learn things from them. So I think I've become a better listener. You know, the game has certainly changed a lot, and it's becoming more of a positionless game now where everybody can do several things on the court. And so you've got to kind of listen to what they have to say. You know, just because somebody's 6'2", that doesn't mean they have to play in the post. And I had a post player, Jenna Taylor, who's on staff now, lead the nation in 3-point shooting. And she was our starting five, but she could shoot the three. I think it probably one of the smartest moves was listening to her and let her shoot it. Yeah. And she led division 1, 2, and 3. That's how good she was at it. So just letting them express what they feel or what they think and actually listen to them. And instead of just thinking I know everything and we're going to do it my way, I think that's been my biggest change.
So was that something then to fit Jenna that you had to make some adjustments? Because obviously, you know, seeing you guys play enough times to have the five stretch out and get enough attempts to lead the nation, obviously had to take some adjustments on your end.
Yeah, it was, you know, we have made some tweaks for players that have certain skill levels like that. And we had done some things close to that, but, you know, she probably took it to another step where we would now run some plays for her to shoot the three rather than just letting him shoot it in transition or asking them to go to the block if they didn't get it out of transition. And, you know, and then at the end of the career, I probably wanted her more on the perimeter than she wanted. At that point, she was ready to still go to the block sometimes. But she was so good at shooting the three. I tried to get her out there as much as I can. So we make changes. We tweak things to fit skill levels. That's where that listening part comes in, and let the players have a say on what they can do.
So another former player and friend of mine that we mentioned a little bit off air is Ashley Ketch, now Dunn. She was not stretching out and shooting any threes for you, but she was blocking a lot of shots inside there. And What did she lead? She lead Division Three, or with the, what was her? Because I remember something about her. Her numbers too were pretty impressive at her time in a Storm jersey.
Yeah. No. Well, first of all, you're right. She didn't stretch out to shoot the three. So, but that was not something she wanted to do or felt she could do. And yes, she led the nation for Division Three in blocking shots. I think it was about five a game. Yeah. And the amazing thing was, her vertical wasn't like she was jumping out of the gym. She just had great timing, and she rarely was in foul trouble. And usually shot blockers will get themselves in foul trouble, but she had great timing, and I don't know if she studied it or if it was just a knack she had, but she could tell where a shooter's release point was and get her hand to that spot as they were shooting. It was to watch her do that without, you know, jumping 30 inches off the ground was amazing. And to just watch her timing and how she could change a game. You know, you would be playing somebody that would like to drive to the basket, and she'd block a couple shots, and all of a sudden now they weren't putting the ball on the floor to get into the paint, or she was guarding somebody that was a good scorer on the block, and she'd block a couple shots, and all of a sudden now they didn't want the ball anymore. So she definitely affected the game.
Yeah.
I will tell you, she taught me something though.
Okay.
We were in the locker room before a game, and I was talking about big girls. I said, the big girls just need to get up and down now. And she just kind of raised her hand and said, Coach, could you call us the tall girls instead of the big girls? And I said, Ashley, I sure can.
Yeah.
So I said, I want the tall girls to get up and down a little bit faster. And so she was a tall girl, not a big girl.
Yeah. Isn't that funny too, though? But that, first of all, sounds very much like Ashley. But too, yeah, to your point, I mean, she's super smart too. And so, when you watch her play and the way that she played, it wasn't something like you said that she was going up and catching them at the highest point and blocking them, you know, two rows into the stands, but she was getting tips and blocks and hands on everything in there. And like you said, that just changes your demeanor, whether you're attacking on the perimeter or whether you're catching on the block. If she's able to get in there, and like you said, not able to get in foul trouble either, it's almost just something that it's like, oh man, what do we do? Like, frustrating for the other team. And so fun group of girls to watch, that was for sure.
Yeah, I enjoyed coaching them and just watching them play together. They were good friends, and you know, they had some very good teams back then. We got to the Sweet 16 three times, and I think she was part of it twice, and just a lot of success. But that's what happens when you have good players who get along well and work hard and understand what it takes, and everybody brings something to the table, and they respected each other, and it was a lot of fun.
So you're leading into my next question. I'm going to put you on the spot. I know this can be difficult, but so three, as you mentioned, three Sweet 16 appearances, any one of those three a little bit sweeter or sticks out the most in your mind for whatever reason, you know, whether it was the games or overcoming adversity or the doing it again, or any one of those three that you hold maybe just slightly above the other two?
Well, I think probably, and I hate to pick one, it's like picking your favorite kid, but yeah, I think one maybe does. We were second in the conference, thought we were done. We got the at large bid, and so it kind of lit a fire under us, and so we got back to the NCAA tournament and played and ended up making it to the Sweet 16, which was in New York. We played at New York University. We stayed. At the time, we were a block and a half from where the Twin Towers had stood, and they were building the new monument there for them. So that was a really humbling experience to see that. But to get the team earn a chance to get to New York City. And after they thought maybe their season was done, and then we got the at-large call and got excited. And I think that was maybe what helped us get to the Sweet 16 was we got nothing to lose now. We already thought we were done. So let's just play and play hard and see what happens. So we won our first two games in the NCAA tournament, got to go to New York City. But when we got there, New York University was the host, and they beat us in a game on their court.
There is something when overcoming the odds or going against the grain, essentially, there's something rewarding and fulfilling about that. So going through, so we talked about 650 wins, you have 13 conference championships, 12 NCAA tournaments, those three Sweet 16, nine times coach of the year. Throughout this whole journey, as you've been going along, I always like to understand a little bit about how you keep an edge and what do you do from a competitiveness level, specifically in practice. Like, how do you gear your practices to kind of keep, it's a long year, especially when you're playing that many postseason games. Like, how are you able to balance getting the skills and the walkthrough and the mental side of things with keeping the edge and keeping practice competitive?
I think what I've learned is you've got to do it on a day-to-day basis. You just worry about what you can do today. You don't worry about, we don't ever talk about winning. Never. We talk about getting better, talk about the process of getting better. You know, we talk about embracing the process and making sure that if we're supposed to get better defensively today, let's have a plan for it and let's work that plan. And so I think that's what I've tried to do is just put it in a day-to-day situation where, okay, tomorrow maybe we're going to work on our offense or today we're working on our trapping full court defense or whatever it is, but let's have a plan on how we're going to get better at it. And then that's our focus. And we're not worrying about who we're playing on Saturday or winning that game. We're worrying about getting better at what we should be doing, which will help us get to what, you know, the end result is, but we don't think about the end result. We talk about and think about the process of how we're going to get there. And I think that's kept me. So every day you have something new that you're thinking about whether it's with players or whether it's about a team strategy or whatever, it's something new for that day. And that keeps it fresh and keeps me excited and, you know, lets me find new challenges. And so,
no, that's great. That's really good. So we talked a little bit about it with you playing two sports personally. The word now in today's world is considered load management is what they like to call it now. How do you approach that? How do you approach keeping the balance between competitive and getting work done, getting better each day, to keeping the women fresh and ready to go and prepared for the stretch of games or whatever you have coming up? Has that changed? Has that philosophy, have you evolved from, you know, your first 10 years as a coach, or what does that look like for you?
That's a really good question. And I think that I have evolved with that. I think, you know, now we'll focus on something, but I might not drive it as hard or we won't stay and make it perfect. What we'll do is we'll work on it, try and just get better at it. You do have to balance, you know, making sure your players are still fresh to play games that you're not wearing them out both physically or mentally in practices. And so that's where my staff is a huge help, because they can tell me, coach, that's, you know, we did that and that's a little too much. And, we got to keep their legs fresh or, you know, we've got to walk through that again, because I don't think they quite understand it yet. And so, I think that helps a lot to have their input and you know, then they understand the, you know, being former players not that long ago of, you know, you want to know what you're doing, but you also got to be fresh both physically and mentally to play. And so where's that breaking point in practice? And they're really good about making sure it's easy to stand on the sideline and tell people we're going to do it again. And then we're going to do it again. And then, well, let's do it one more time. And
right.
Because you're not the one out there doing it. And,
yep.
But to have the assistant say, coach, that's, I think they got it. They're getting tired. We need to cut it off. And so having that kind of input is very valuable. And that's something that I've changed, you know, over the years. I used to just do it until I was, I guess, not pleased, but
yeah,
satisfied that
right.
they knew what they were doing.
Yeah. No.
Now, if they tell me they've got it, or the player or the coaches tell me, you know, that's enough, then I'm ready to move on. And I don't think twice about it.
That's good. Is there something, we've actually talked to a few coaches here recently about this too. Has there been something, terminology wise, you know, especially now I'm thinking just cause you have a younger roster this year, is there something terminology wise that you've caught yourself, or maybe one of your assistants, or maybe one of the players finally came up to you and said, yeah, hey coach, I have no idea what you mean when you say jam the screen or whatever the terminology might be. Is there something that you've learned that you've had to change or evolve from a terminology side of things, or re-explain?
Yeah, there, you know, the one that probably sticks out to me is when I played, you used to have the give and go.
Okay.
So, mm-hmm. you know, now I tell them you got to pass and cut. You know, I don't think if I would tell them run a give and go now to the wing that they would understand what I was talking about. So, you know, you change it to pass and cut or, so there are a few things that I try to make sure that I don't throw at them, but I try and keep things simple. I use a lot of terminology that I think is self-explanatory, and so that they don't have to try and figure it out. And I'm not trying to get too complicated. I try to keep the mind clear and let the body do the work. So
that makes a lot of sense, actually. Last one here from me, coach. And so being down in Indianola, I would imagine has to be a huge advantage for you guys, just given the fact of the growth, the skill increase level of girls and women's basketball, especially here in Central Iowa. And so from a recruiting standpoint, you know, one, just recruiting philosophy in general, I know we talked a little bit about, you know, going and finding the best athlete and then making sure that it fits your system and your program. But on that side of things, how much of a benefit is it for you to be able to recruit, you know, the Des Moines metro area? I know looking at your roster too, you have several kids who, you know, making the short 15, 20, 25 minute drive down to Indianola and have an opportunity to continue to play college basketball.
Yeah, I think some of the best basketball that's played is in the CIML and you know, in the Des Moines area. And you know, if you can get players from those schools, you know, I think you're gonna have a chance to be pretty good. And you know, there are good things and bad things when we're recruiting with being so close. Some of them want to go away to college.
Yeah.
But like we tell them, you know, once you get on campus, you are away. And if you don't go home, you're really far away. And the nice thing is, you know, you can run home if you want to, or if you need to, or if there's an emergency, you don't have to jump in a car for 6 hours or whatever. So, yeah, there's definitely some good basketball being played you know, you try and find the ones. There's so much transferring that goes on nowadays, and I think people make decisions based on the wrong things, and then they get to school and things don't work out, and then they can't figure out why. But if you make decisions based on a fit, you know, do you fit the program, its style? Do you fit academically? Do you fit socially? Then I don't worry about them transferring. So the ones we recruit, we want to make sure they fit our style. We want to make sure academically, you know, Simpson's a very strong school. And so our conference is an amazing conference. You know, I think the schools are all well, you know, do well academically. They're all top-notch NCAA institutions. And so you got to battle hard for the players you want.
Yeah. And, you know, as you and Brian mentioned, you know, girls basketball in the state of Iowa is at incredible level. And when we're speaking more specifically to the CIML, you know, close to Indianola, that is one of the top, you know, in the nation, you know, and the conference is in the nation, in my opinion. So a lot of talents around here, you know, just, you know, obviously, as you mentioned, a lot of different ways to get them down to Indianola and down to Simpson. But we do have, you know, as we've mentioned a couple of times, Coach, we do have a lot of coaches that listen to our podcast. We've had a lot of coaching guests as well. And I'm sure, you know, you've talked to many, many younger coaches, but what is some of the advice that you give to them or that you would give to them? You know, hey, somebody calls you out of the blue and says, hey, I'm a brand new head coach. What advice do you got for me?
Yeah, I would say, you know, I encourage coaches to always network with each other, get to know as many other coaches as you can. Never think that you know it all. I've been doing it for about 40 years now overall total, and if you start to think that you know it all, then you're going to start declining. So always look for something new. It adds excitement to what you're doing in practice and stuff, but as long as you keep evolving with the game and with your team, I think that's it's a fun challenge and will keep you going in the right direction.
That's great. Yeah. I heard a lot about the networking side of things, and, you know, a lot of different coaches that we've talked to have utilized, you know, their network, other people's growing networks to, you know, whether that be a new job and stuff like that. But, that's great. You know, I think that, you know, a lot of our coaches will appreciate that, obviously, with, you know, your amount of experience and level of experience as well. So we appreciate that.
Hey, Coach. So I also get then on that point, got to ask you, I know the philosophy is one game at a time, but January 18th, you match up with former assistant coach Lonnie against Go To Central. What's that going to be like when you get an opportunity to meet up with Coach Mo again?
To be honest, I haven't thought about it. So I'm more worried about the game this week. When we get to that point, I'll start to worry about it. But I truly only look at the next game. And I know that's so cliche, but it just helps me stay focused and
all right. Well, Coach, it's been great to learn a little bit more about you, learn a little bit more about your background and the coaching history here. But we have one more section here that we like to call rapid fire. Brian will ask you a couple questions, some about hoops, some not, and you just let us know what comes to the top of your head.
Okay.
All right, Coach. First one we always lead with, and you've been in several, but what is your favorite visiting gym or arena you've had the opportunity to coach in?
Oh, wow. Well, I suppose Drake. We've played them in exhibition games.
That's funny that you say that, because I was looking last year. I know you guys played at Drake, and so I was going to ask you about the Knapp Center. And so that's awesome that came up as one of yours, because that is just a great venue for basketball, playing, watching, everything and above. And so that has to be a lot of fun for you and your girls when you get an opportunity to go there. This next one I'm excited about, because again, my inside research tells me that there might be a little bit going on here with this one, but we asked this to a lot of coaches, but game day routine or superstition?
I'm very superstitious. If we win, I will wear the same outfit the next game. And One year we won our first game or lost our first game and then lost our last game. And I wore my outfit for 24 games in a row.
Oh, wow.
So I am very superstitious.
is there a routine or that. Something? You know, we've had coaches on the pod before that have to shower before a game or don't eat the day of a game. Is there anything like that that you have in your routine?
Well, there's a few things. I will drive the same way after a win. You know, the next game coming, if we lost the last game, I'll take a different route back down to to Indianola. And then my pregame, I always come to my office first and go through some things, X's and O's wise, before I go down to the gym. And yeah, I'm very superstitious.
So if I understand correctly, you live in Altoona. So how many different ways are there from Altoona to Indianola?
Well, I can go through Des Moines, and there's several different ways. You're going to end up on the bypass.
Yeah,
or 65, 69 coming down. But there, I have found several different ways to get to 65, 69 from Altoona.
That's awesome. That's fun. I like to hear those. All right. So who's the greatest baseball player ever in your eyes?
Oh, wow. Well, I got to play against several when I was growing up. I got to play one game against Barry Bonds. I got to play against Chris Cohn, who pitched for the Yankees, Rick Sutcliffe.
Oh, wow.
You know, those are I guess some of my players that I enjoyed watching be successful in the major leagues just because of playing against them.
That's a good list.
Best player ever. Boy, I don't know. It would have to be a Kansas City Royal. Okay. Maybe Bo Jackson.
Ooh, there you go.
I like that one. I can get behind that. He was something special. So good one. Good one there. So 35 years. How many technicals?
Somebody asked me that the other day, and I think in 35 years I've had maybe three.
Oh wow.
And how many of those were early in the tenure?
Yeah, they were very early. I have learned, doesn't help much, but I also know how far I can push an official before I'll cross the line.
Right.
That's good. That is good. Do you have a favorite sports movie? I'm guessing it might be a baseball movie here, but do you have a favorite sports movie?
Now, Field of Dreams, obviously, is pretty good. It was a neat thing they did with Major League Baseball playing there the last couple of years. But
it's been awesome.
That's one of the favorite movies. You know, I had a chance and an opportunity to work Michael Jordan's camps for a few years and got to meet him and stuff. So, you know, it wasn't a movie, but when they came out on HBO with the special of showing his career and what went on, I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, oh, man.
That was really good.
Last Dance was something special. For anybody anywhere close to that era or involved with the game of basketball, you had to just sink your teeth into that. I know Adam and I did. So that
absolutely.
That's a great one. All right. So Adam and I get an opportunity to come down to Indianola and take in some Storm basketball. Where's the local spot that we got to go before the game to catch a bite to eat before we head over to the stadium?
Sports Page is pretty good.
Ooh, Sports Page.
Yeah.
I like that. That's a good call on that one. Have to jot that down. What about, do you do much pizza? You have a favorite pizza in Iowa?
Well, I do. In Des Moines, it's at the Hilltop. And then Indianola, the Brick House, has fantastic pizza.
The Brick House is good. I think it was last fall I was down there for a birthday party, up above. And, yeah, Brick House was really good. I will second that one if, in Indianola as well.
Is there still, I think it was maybe called Beaver's Pizza or something like that. Is that still around?
I don't think so.
No, because we used to come to Simpson basketball camp every summer, and there was, I feel like it was called that, but there was this humongous piece, just like ridiculously big, that we would always get, and you'd have to put it in the back of a truck because like it was seriously humongous. And I think it was called Beaver's Pizza, but I will have to ask one of my buddies about that. Good pizza, but also it was humongous, so it could fit it could actually feed an entire basketball team.
Wow.
So a little off the cuff, but speaking of Simpson basketball camp, how difficult from a logistics side of things would it be to find a way to maybe a preseason scrimmage or ideally even a game, but how logistically difficult would it be to get a game up in Hopper? I'd love to see a game up in old Hopper gym.
Oh, I'd yeah. It, the sad thing is Hopper is becoming a wrestling room now.
Oh, is it? And
with some renovations that have gone on here. So we're losing that historic site for basketball, but boy, that's a fun place to play. That's where the coaches used to play over the noon hour because it's 10 feet shorter than the regular basketball court downstairs.
Nice.
So we didn't have to run as far that way.
That's good. That was always when we were there for camp, we always got excited when we saw Hopper on the schedule. For whatever reason, kind of took you back. That was a shooter's gym.
Yeah, fun place to play.
Fun place to play, that is for sure. So, all right, Coach, last one. We'll get you out of here. We've mentioned it several times throughout the pod. Obviously, you know, there was something special about Simpson College in Indianola that really kind of grabbed you from the get-go. But looking back and getting an opportunity here, kind of think and revisit some of that, what do you think is the best thing about having the opportunity to be the head women's basketball coach at Simpson College?
I think the balance of academics and athletics that you can sell to the athletes. They're going to get a great education. They're going to play in a top women's basketball program. So it's kind of has the best of both worlds.
And that is hard to beat. That's a really good answer. And so, Coach, we appreciate it. We'll definitely be following along here as you guys continue to move through the year. This will come out on Tuesday. And so I know you guys have a game against Iowa Westland on Wednesday. Anxious to see how that goes. And then we move into December and you guys start moving into league play. And so following your guys' journey, we'll definitely be watching. We wish you all the success and appreciate you taking some time to chat with us.
Well, I appreciate you guys having me on, and I look forward to answering your question on January 16th.
You're going to get a message for sure.
we will definitely be in touch. And as Brian said, Coach, it was great to talk to you. Great to learn a little bit more about you, and definitely be following the Storm this upcoming season, the rest of the season, and look forward to a good ending to it.
All right. Thank you very much.